Madness, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's Place to Talk.
Hip hip hooray, let's give a cheer. It's 9 a.m., the signal's clear. Our favorite host is in the chair. The Truman Show is on the air.
It's the Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County.
The Truman Show is on the air. The Truman Show is on the air.
Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. Absolutely gorgeous day. I got up about 4 something this morning, so I wouldn't miss any of it. And have Admiral Jimmy Taylor on. I always love having the Admiral on because I get to hear some of the things that are just absolutely fascinating to me. And there's so many things going on. Before we get to all of that good stuff, let's talk about the Smyrna Rotary and what you guys are working on right now.
Thank you, Truman. I think Truman saw me walk in this, had a red shirt on with an insignia. I think he thought it was an elephant. He didn't want to do anything if it was about Alabama.
Yeah, I was about to say goodbye, Jimmy.
But I have a shirt on that's advertising the Wings of Freedom fish fry, which we've had every year now, I think, for 10 years. And it's grown every year, and we raise money to provide back to our nonprofits or to people that need money. One of our big contributions has been to the Boys and Girls Club in Smyrna. We have donated $250,000 to the Boys and Girls Club, and that was a pledge over 5 years. So we've paid that off. Now we're looking for other type donations for those really worthwhile causes. The fish fry is on the 12th of September. Is held at the Smyrna Airport in Corporate Flight, which has been a wonderful sponsor of that big hangar. Yes. Last year, we had somewhere between 1,100 and 1,200 people, and we've got a pretty good production line. We've been doing this enough that we've got it pretty well suitcased when it comes to how we handle that many people and keep the food hot and keep the food flowing. So it's looking for. I think it starts at like 4 o'clock, and we are honoring the Korean War veterans this year. Every year,
wow, good for you.
We honor a military group, so we're working our way through a lot of military organizations.
You know, Korea, that was one of the toughest wars to fight for our soldiers, and it was basically, when you get right down to it, a political war when you get right into it, because the way it was handled, because you had such great leaders over there at that time.
Well, one of the problems or one of the situations that made it such a tough fight was, first of all, it was the end of World War II with downsize like we tended to do. And, and we don't, it's a,
like we're
the
doing
wheel
now.
Comes around, we're doing it again. We did it with Carter, now we're doing it again. And we're going to find ourselves in a hole and got a problem and we're not be able to handle it as well as we should.
And that's one of the things we want to talk to. But I do want to mention, I have been to the Wings of Freedom, the dinners there. It was one of the more fun places that I've ever been, and got to meet so many different people that I've been friends over the years and haven't seen them in such a long time. And you guys, you get that traffic flowing. You don't really bottleneck like you would think you would, because you guys are right on top.
We have lots of organizations that help us put that on, like the Boy Scouts handle the traffic and a couple of troops of Boy Scouts. And it's really an airport turns over backwards to help keep that crowd flowing like you see. And, of course, we have great entertainment. We always have a great band and dancing, and we have beverages there for people. And so it's probably one of the best feeds for the price that you're going to get to.
You know, we're kind of strung out right now with our military. And which that's nothing unusual, because we're pretty much taking care of the world. When you get right down to it. But there has been some strange things going on lately where the Russian aircraft has been going over into our space. and it's causing a lot of tension, and I don't think a lot of people understand really what's going on.
Well, that's been going a long time, Truman. Mm-hmm. When I was at Fighter Town, as it's called, in San Diego, Naval Air Station Miramar, in 1959, when I got there as a brand new ensign with a brand new wife on a brand new, at the time, million-dollar aircraft, which was unheard of, but the F-8 Crusader, we stood alert down there occasionally for exercises run by the what called ADIZ, Air Defense Identification Zone, controlled by NORAD, North American radar sites. And we'd be on alert, and we'd get one night there was four of us on alert, and we were told to launch. Mm-hmm. And back then, that was considered almost real because we were exercising. We were flying against B-52s, which were imitating the Russian Bison, which is a big four-engine or a strategic bomber. So we took off, and we climbed up, and we were in the afterburner, and we were leveled off at about 35,000 feet and headed toward L.A. and out over the ocean. And the controller called Buster. Well, Buster is the term to go max power. So we went into afterburner, which is as much power as you can get out of the airplane, mm-hmm. and got supersonic. And four of us in trail, about a two-mile trail, crossed L.A. at about 3,000 or 4,000 feet, supersonic, mm-hmm. heading out to the ocean. Of course, we don't hear a lot of booms over the U.S. anymore because you can't do that. That's why we don't have supersonic transport mm-hmm. in a lot of cases. But we had a lot of reports that night back from L.A. that they thought they were having an earthquake because that could really, and we, you know, knocked a few dishes off and cracked a few windows. And but that was really, back then, that ADIZ was in place and is still in place. And we have had some intrusions along the California coast just recently. And we've had intrusions. When I say intrusions, airplanes are getting close, and mm-hmm. you can kind of, there are several definitions of what our identification zone is as far as a distance from the coast. Mm-hmm. And we argue over that quite a bit about who has the regulation. You can see how China's trying to move their airspace out over mm-hmm. to completely across the South China Sea.
Yeah.
So, they've been sniffing around the edges, and the reason for that is not so much as they're trying to penetrate our airspace. They're trying to see what our command and control is when they get close to airspace. And they've got all sorts of electronic means on those aircraft to measure who we're talking to, what kind of radars we bring up. They can identify frequencies, mm-hmm. voices. So it's a very sophisticated cat and mouse game mm-hmm. that we do with them and they do with us. Now, it's been in low key since the wall fell and the Cold War no longer exists, but if you look at what Putin is doing today, I think we're trying to get back in some of the same modes we had before the Berlin Wall fell.
Mm.
And he lost not only prestige, but he lost territories, and he's trying to, I think, bring things back together as the USSR was before the wall fell.
You kind of wonder if it's not a publicity thing for Russia. I mean, it sounds crazy, but people don't really think of Russia up there in the top of the world leaders anymore. They seem to be distant. China seems to be taking a lot of their thunder right now.
Well, that has occurred, and you don't know how much is ego on Putin's part and how much is actually to get something in his war plan, if mm-hmm. there is such a thing. But we've been doing this. I have flown a wing on Russian bombers over about a 30-year period.
Mm-hmm.
These exercises that they do, I call them exercises. It's as close to war as you can get without actually firing a shot. But the Russians always, when we launched with a battle group leaving the U.S. of A. and heading to a Yankee station in the South China Sea off the coast of North Vietnam, mm-hmm. they would always try to overfly the carrier strike group.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all sorts of programs to try to figure out when they're launching and where they're launching from with They used to have the badger, bison, and bear.
Mm-hmm.
And the bear is what's been flying around the edges of Alaska in the Adias area.
Now, is all of Alaska, does it have that fly zone, no fly zone for Russia? Because a lot of it is just empty land.
Well, if you look at the Aleutian chain,
mm-hmm.
it tails off in a kind of a crescent shape from Alaska mainland all the way over almost to the Russian coast.
Mm-hmm.
So our Adias there almost touches the Russian Adias, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so we play, and we've got a place out there on the very tip of the Aleutian chain called Tsushima. And that's one of our strips out there, a very remote place. And so we're always kind of touching each other's defense zones. So it's not unique, but I think they've been penetrating, like I said, all the way down to California.
Mm-hmm.
And the bear is their big four-engine turbine, counter-rotating prop, long-range strategic bomber.
Mm-hmm.
It's over 50 years old. I'm sure there have been upgrades and maybe some new ones manufactured. But
do they have the gas suppliers, the planes that actually supply those planes while they're coming over here?
They have a lot of tanker aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have the KC-10 and the KC-135s, and we get a new KC-X. I can't remember what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bear carries so much fuel and has such good economy to have those four big engines, since it's a prop plane, prop mm-hmm. turbine. It can go... I don't know what the range. The range is almost like 15,000 miles.
Wow.
So they can come all the way into mm-hmm. the States and turn around and go back and still have fuel to spare. One of their newer aircraft, which is called the Blackjack,
mm-hmm.
Is a supersonic swing-wing heavy bomber, and it supposedly has without refueling, like a 12-hour... now, that's probably not, that's not supersonic, but mm-hmm. a 12-hour on-time station. We've got one like that. It's called a B-1. People mm-hmm. probably heard of the B-1. Some people call it the bone. If you add the B and spell out one, you got bone. So
right.
it's called a bone by the people that fly it. And it's been around for, I guess, almost 30 years, too.
Mm-hmm.
So those aircraft are getting old, and there's nothing new coming in the inventory of strategic bombers. But... The Bear is in April of 1969, I was aboard the Bonhomme Richard. We call it the Bonnie Dick.
Mm-hmm.
It was a CVA 31. And we had just gotten to Yankee Station, and we were out there with the CVA 14, which is a Ticonderoga. And the Russians, no, not the Russians, but the North Koreans shot down one of our reconnaissance aircraft in the Sea of Japan. Shot mm-hmm. down a EC-121, which is a version of the Super Constellation that we used to have before the jets took over the airline business.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did that, I was operations officer for VF-51 called the Screaming Eagles. I was told to take a detachment of four F-8 Crusaders over the Tycho and we went up to the Sea of Japan and patrolled up there because we didn't knock off our reconnaissance flights around the edge of Russia up there
mm-hmm.
and North Korea. And it's the Sea of Japan during that time frame, the water is very cold and the weather was very bad. And I was on the alert catapult on the carrier, 5-minute alert. Got the signal to go. I launched. I was in the goo right away. I tried to get on top. I got all the way up to 40,000 feet, and I was still in the goo, and I had a wingman on my right, and we were vectored toward a target.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what it was. And so I had my wingman move out to my right to see how much visibility I had inside the clouds, and I had about probably close to a quarter of a mile. So I vectored in on the bomber, or on the target, and I locked my radar up. And when you lock it up, you get a circle with a steering dot.
Mm-hmm.
So I put that steering dot right in the center and started easing from the 6 o'clock position up on this target. And finally, it popped into my view at about a quarter mile. And I joined up on right under the tail. And the tail of these bombers have a radar control, I think they're 20 millimeter or 30 millimeter cannon. Mm-hmm. And those cannon track you the whole time you're making. It's kind of eerie because you know they've got you dead to rights if they wanted to. And so I joined up right under the tail, probably about 30 feet away from the airplane. Mm-hmm. And the Russian gunner was peeking out his window, and he had on a leather helmet, and he had a great big camera with a red lens, and he was just flashing away at my airplane. And so we played tag up there, flying on his wing, and finally I was getting fuel low and I had to go back to carrier. Mm-hmm. So go back, and it was really almost below minimums to get aboard the carrier. It was less than 200 feet and there was no place to go, and no fuel in there. And so I made the approach, and I hear the landing signal officer said, I hear you, keep it coming. I'm flying needles. You can lock up on and you get vertical information and horizontal information. So my needles were centered, and he said, and the next thing I hear is landed. So I knew, and I see a flash of the deck going by, and I crashed into the deck and come to stop, and my knees are shaking because that's what the aftermath of that was. The next morning, the admiral on our ship gets a message, and I had created an international incident because you're not supposed to do what I did. But so it's Commander Taylor to the bridge, the admiral's bridge. I go up, and he said, well, we have an international incident with your rendezvousing on that Russian aircraft in the clouds yesterday. And I said, yes, sir. Just thought it was the right thing. He said, okay, consider yourself reprimanded. That was well done.
Yeah, I love that. You know, first of all, when you go on those flights like that, you know that you're going to be very low on fuel by the time you get back. Do they not have a tanker anywhere in that area that you could meet?
Well, when you're basically IFR, instrument flight rules, from really the deck all the way up to 40,000 feet, there's no place to get the tanker.
Oh, wow.
I could have done what I did on that bomber, but that's, nobody has done that before, but I guess you could but it's just one of those things where you know that your hind end is on the line, because if you go down in the water, you're probably not going to last more than about 15 to 20 minutes because of the hypothermia. Yeah. And trying to get a helo to you, even if you ejected alongside the ship, if you couldn't get aboard. So there's a lot of, you know, we do that often. And I guess it's professionalism and the good training that we get we always seem to figure out a way to get it done.
That's the good thing about our American pilots. But how far out can we detect those type of planes, the enemy planes, coming into our territory? When do we first know that they're there?
Well, we have some, I call them black programs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, even I never got with my top secret clearance and running black programs in some of my various jobs. What we do and how we find out where they are and what they're doing and when they land and take off. But we usually have some sort of prior warning that they're coming. Mm-hmm. And then our radars, and we have what we call a E2, I think it's E2Ds now, which are early warning, got the big dome on the top, carrier, turbine aircraft. Mm-hmm. We put those out about 200 miles, and their radar is good out to about 200 miles, much further than that carrier radar can see. Mm-hmm. So we usually have a pretty good way to pick those. We try to intercept them at 200 miles.
Okay.
We don't want to show how far we really could get them, but 200 miles is kind of where the admiral or the battle group operations to pick up anything we had in the way of unknowns coming toward the Carrier battle group.
Mm-hmm.
So usually when anytime you've seen a picture of one of those Russian bombers passing our carrier, there's always an airplane on his wing, and that airplane is us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was almost a hard requirement that when that Russian bomber passed the ship, it had to have a fighter on its wing.
You're almost having to fly by the seat of your pants in a lot of those situations. And it's amazing to me, those planes that are coming over here could be very destructive if they were a mine to. And you're with them. At what point do you say enough is enough?
Well, if we saw them open their bomb bay doors,
mm-hmm.
we can easily move back in a position to fire a missile
mm-hmm.
To take them out of the air. Now, if they're right over the top of the task force, it's tit for tat, I guess. He's going to lose and we're going to lose.
Right.
But we have never had a situation where that has occurred, with the exception of the kamikaze at the end of World War II.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's the last time we've had a carrier really threatened by an air threat.
Mm-hmm.
And people talk about that carriers are very susceptible to our enemy's ability to knock us out of the water. But since World War II, where we had 100 carriers at the end of World War II, mm-hmm. people don't realize how many we had operating, different sizes, of course, we have not lost a carrier. Okay, now we have built lots of bases around the world
mm-hmm.
during World War II, at the end of World War II, or during the Cold War. We had bases all over the world. Those bases cost almost as much as a carrier.
Mm.
We have not lost a carrier, and we've lost almost every base we've had around the world.
That's unreal.
To give you an indication of the economy of scale, so to speak, of what's more effective, a base, land base, or a carrier. With 4.5 acres of mobile international water, go anywhere kind of, and 50 aircraft that are probably 100 times more deadly than airplanes we had in World War II.
Politicians, and you and I think, agree on this. The last president I remember who was very, very strong on the safety of our country was probably Ronald Reagan. Some of the things that he came out with during that time were scoffed at by the press and others, that they were not used to what he was proposing. And I know what he was getting was directly from experts like you guys. And it seems like politicians like to, and this is pure politicians, they love the rhetoric, and they love to spew out all these things that they're so aware of, and they're really not. I mean, we have a lot of this, and there's always a fight between the Pentagon and those particular people. When will they ever start listening to what our particular needs are? Because what you're saying is really a simple equation.
I think one of the situations that impact that kind of thought that we have today is the fact that our Congress doesn't understand why we exist
mm-hmm.
and the culture of the military and what you need to do to keep the tip of the sword pointed and sharp. If you look at the percentage, I think I might have mentioned this before once with you, but the percentage of people in Congress that have had military experience, have been yeah. in the military, is decreased radically since the end of World War II, or since really in the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And before, we had like 75% of the Senate was ex-military, and it was about 60% in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's down, the combination of the Senate and the House, I think it's down to like 18-17%. So we have people that don't really understand, from a personal standpoint, why we exist in the military. And you can see it happens every time. This particular cycle has occurred in my 34 years in the Navy, that cycle occurred twice with different presidents. Mm-hmm. And we just wait until somebody slaps us up beside the head and say, oh, we got to do something about that. We need to get a better helmet, mm-hmm. keep from getting concussions like we're getting. And so when I was in the Pentagon as aviation plans and programs for the Navy, that was Reagan and as the president, and the Secretary of the Navy was John Lehman. Mm-hmm. And that was Reagan's guy who had put in there to build up to a 600-ship Navy. We got to 600 ships. We're down to 270-something ships now.
That's unbelievable. With all the way we're stretched out and all the things that we're involved in, why would we be reducing our military? Of course, I know the cost or whatever.
Well, cost is always a factor, and they're trying to blame it on personnel, but personnel has remained about the same percentage of the defense budget over the years. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to take it out of hide with personnel accounts, vice. And so we're losing people, and the numbers are I just read the other day a military on the one of the Pentagon papers that the Army is having to let go a whole raft of officers. First, the captains, and now they're up to majors. I think even there might be a lieutenant colonel's coming up. But so mm-hmm. they're letting, I mean, like not just a few, I'm talking about hundreds are losing their place in line.
Mm-hmm.
And that really creates a morale problem. And, you know, we are noted for the good morale in the U.S. military.
Yeah.
But it's hard to maintain a good sense of being when you're seeing your buddy next to you get selected to go when he's done a good job, got good fitness reports, and is a real warrior,
mm-hmm.
and he has to go. And that's disheartening to be in that position and to be in the position to see those people let loose.
And the thing about it, what really scares me is I can't see anything getting any better right now because everybody is just going their own way. They don't understand. They don't. You know, one of the biggest things that you do if you're running an organization at all, you select people who are smarter than you are, and you listen to them. I mean, we've got the best brain trust in the world with our military, and a lot of times their voices are quieted.
When the military is left to do what they're trained to do without political interference, mm-hmm. we are much more effective than we are running on a civilian direction.
Unbeatable. And we've seen that in so many wars. We have a caller on the line, Admiral, so we have to put our ears on. Caller, welcome aboard with Admiral Jimmy Taylor.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You all just hit on one thing that I want to hit on. First of all, we have the largest army in the world. We have more bases stationed in the world. We've done all this good stuff. We got the most educated people in the world. Why are we in the shape we're in? One thing is still controlled by money. Why do we continue? Let's talk about Vietnam. Some of my best friends lost their life in Vietnam. You know what they said? Every position of the armed forces were fighting a war all to themselves. Until we Americans become one again, we're never going to win. And just think about in Iraq, sir. They told us the war was over. Why are we still fighting there? And that is that the bad guys are taking back over again. They don't want to help themselves. You can't make people help themselves. Talk to me, sir. I'm listening.
One of the things we found out when we invaded Grenada, so to speak, was that our military services couldn't talk very well to one another and were not well coordinated. Since that time, we have the best coordinated military, Marines, Army, Air Force, Navy, even the Coast Guard, than anybody has ever seen. We talk the same language at the same time in the same area, and it's controlled specifically by a big hammer somewhere, and we don't have those problems anymore when it comes to being coordinated and fighting the right thing at the right time.
We sent a whole army overseas, and sir, we're fighting terrorists. What's bothering me, we got an army. We're talking about war. We got army everywhere. But we're fighting terrorists, which seems like me. It's one or two guys every now and then, and now we fear, we're scared of America. Can an army stop terrorists?
Can't say, repeat that?
Can an army stop terrorists?
Well, we can stop anybody that's out there in the world if we know where they are. The problem is maintaining the kind of intelligence and it's not just electronic intelligence. We need people on the ground that are integrated with those terrorist groups, and that's hard to do because most Americans don't look like the terrorists we're fighting. So it's very hard to get the kind of intelligence we used to have almost around the world to maintain the kind of specific things that we need to do to negate the terrorist activity. And you can always point fingers at our different intelligence organizations and how they collect intelligence and how they review it and how they put it together. But it's a very complex picture, and it's hard to do. And that's why, you know, if you look at the fact that NSA was supposedly checking all these phone calls and all these electronic information that the public is putting out, that's one way you pick up things that sometimes, and as you know, we have not had a 9/11 since 9/11. And one of the reasons is because what the NASA and the other intelligence departments have been doing, and we're knocking things out that you never hear about. And so we need that kind of information. Otherwise, we're sitting in a dark room with blinders and earphones keep us from hearing. So you can't play in the dark. You got to have a wide open intelligence network. And some people don't like that. They think it impinges their privacy. But my position personally is I don't mind. If I'm not doing anything wrong, I don't care what they hear.
How long is this going to go on? Forever?
Well, if you look at the fact that the most terrorists are coming from Muslim groups, the fact we have 1.6 billion Muslims in the world, even though maybe only 10% are in the extreme group, that's still a lot of people to keep up with when they're spread all over the world. So I don't necessarily, this is probably kind of a dreary thing to say, but I don't see an end to it anytime soon.
Well, we got problems then, don't we?
We sure do.
Have a good day. Appreciate
you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Casey. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Admiral Jimmy Taylor.
This summer, when you find yourself at the store buying an ice-cold, refreshing soft drink, consider something hot, like a fire and dice instant game from the Tennessee Lottery. Or when you need that big bag of ice, try a scorching hot cash ticket. And when you just gotta have that ice cream sandwich, pick up a heat wave ticket. Hot new instant games, cold hard cash. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
Hey, did you just throw away a Tennessee Lottery ticket?
Yeah, wasn't a winner.
Would you throw a brand new TV in the trash?
Of course not. Our TV's terrible.
Haven't you heard of the Tennessee Lottery's VIP Player Suite? You can redeem tickets for VIP points that get you cool things, like TVs.
Really?
I could be watching a new TV right now.
Instead, you're watching what I throw in the trash.
Don't trash your chance at the things you love. Now instant and drawing-style tickets get you closer to a reward in the VIP Player Suite. Visit dnlottery.com for more info. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
Breaking news. This is Talk Radio WGNS. And this from the WGNSRadio.com News Center. Just before 8 this morning, officers responded to 706 Majesty Drive. That's Majesty Drive, in reference to an elderly male armed with a gun who appeared to be in an agitated state of mind. This from Murfreesboro Police. When responding officers arrived, they were able to convince the man to place a gun on the ground. The male subject appeared to be suffering from dementia or some other mental condition that caused confusion and agitation. He was taken to the VA hospital for evaluation. Now, this was near Siegel Middle School and Irma Siegel Elementary. Both of those schools were briefly placed on lockdown status. The lockdown is over. The incident has been resolved, if you will. But just wanted to let you know, if you saw some activity this morning near Siegel Middle School and Irma Siegel Elementary, they were placed on lockdown briefly. Magistry Drive is in the area of those schools. We'll continue to have more on air and online at WGNSradio.com.
Get out of the house. Turn off the computers, cell phones, and video games. It's time to create some family memories with your mom, dad, your children, or your spouse. Or maybe just spend some quality time with your friends. I'm Randy Boland from Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street between Highway 840 and Thompson Lane. Me and my staff treat people the way we would like to be treated when shopping for fishing, hunting, or shooting supplies. Murfreesboro Outdoors, open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 6 on Northwest Broad Street. I'm Randy Boland. Now, turn off the computers and go hunting or fishing.
One more reason to drive friendly. I'm Ron Jordan with local news from WGNS. Tennessee Highway Patrol will have a driver's license checkpoint set up in the Murfreesboro-Rockville area on Friday.
This is Sergeant Scott Miller with the Tennessee Highway Patrol. We'll be conducting a driver's license checkpoint August 15th, located at Highway 99 at Old Salem Road.
You'll need to have your driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance, and it's always a good idea to hang up, buckle up, and slow down. An update on a traffic incident. Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Department's District 9 responded to a motor vehicle accident involving a tractor-trailer truck just before 4 o'clock Wednesday. Now, the Tennessee Highway Patrol says 52-year-old Billy D. Melton Jr., who was driving the truck, fell asleep at the wheel. The truck drifted to the side of the road where it struck a guardrail, then redirected back across the interstate where it came to a rest straddling I-24, destroying a median dividing wall. Melton, transported by ambulance to St. Thomas Rutherford Hospital. His condition is unknown, but state troopers say he was not wearing a seatbelt. The suicide of actor Robin Williams has Murfreesboro and the nation talking about clinical depression. National Depression Screening Day will be Thursday, October 9th. Through this program, Branches Counseling Center will be offering the 5th annual free mental health screening at Reeves Sane Drugstore, 1801 Memorial Boulevard, from 9 a.m. till noon. And several hundred radio and television broadcasters attended the 66th Annual Tennessee Association of Broadcasters Conference at the Embassy Suites Hotel and Conference Center. The governor was the keynote speaker. I'm Ron Jordan. You are up to date. And this is WGNS News.
Brought to you by Kester Chiropractic and Acupuncture Center on Broad across from Chevrolet of Murfreesboro.
At our office, one of our number one goals is to get you better faster and keep you better longer. For a free consultation, give me a call at 895-1253.
Brought to you by SafeAuto.com. Safe Auto gets it. Life doesn't stop. That's why they're here 24/7 to help keep you going. Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO if you ever need a friendly voice. The right car insurance for the right price.
When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help you devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs.
Hi, I'm Laura Kendrick. I'm the finance manager here. One of the most rewarding things about my job is I get to be in contact with the home care aides that we have. They have a real heart for our clients.
Everybody needs a little help now and then, and At Home Care is here to help.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Tuning. I'm the HR manager at Home Care. We at Home Care want to hire the best health care aides for those who really want to stay in their homes. We want people who care and go over, above, and beyond. We do that. Ground checks to make sure that we do have the best. We stress that it's the heart that matters and that the people depend on them for their needs. Some of our clients have no one else and may be their only contact for the day.
Find out more at homecaretn.com or by calling 713-4639.
WeatherEye.
We'll see mostly sunny skies here for this afternoon. A high in the mid-80s and north winds of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear, a low near 61. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 73.
Premier Six Theater on Broad and Jackson Heights, showing all of your favorite movies. Call their hotline, 896-4100, or go see a movie.com. Popcorn pop fresh daily. Their movie hotline, 896-4100, or go see a movie.com. Premier Six on Broad and Jackson Heights.
The Truman Show on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
And welcome back with Admiral Jimmy Taylor. And this part of his show is brought to you by Biddle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat. And 7 out of 10 Americans suffer a hearing loss after the age of 50. And it's not from our military either. Now, but there is a way to restore your hearing, and you need to give Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat a call today. Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat has been Rutherford County's trusted provider of taking care of all the coughing, sneezing, stuffed up feelings for almost 2 decades. Their team of caring physicians, audiologists, nurses, and administrators are standing ready for you and your family so you can improve your style of healthy living. They also have a mobile hearing unit that will actually come to your home, diagnose, and fit you with a hearing device right in the comfort of your living room. Call Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat today at 848-9265. That's 848-9265. You know, I think it's not hard to see what's going on in the Mideast. I know it's a complicated issue when you're having to deal with it, but there are so many different groups that are over there. They're going to be in constant battle probably as long as this earth is going to stand. There's no way to get around that. And we have, over the years, we have funded monies for each particular group as it's gone. I remember we were talking off the air about Khomeini, but we remember when the Shah of Iran was over there, and he pretty much had a control over what was going on. And he was from, each one of these is from basically a different religious group as it happens. And they're not going to tolerate the other group no matter what happens. And so much of it is, violence seems to control everything in those. And we have funded monies. We have funded arms for each particular group as it goes along. And sooner or later, it comes back to bite us. There's just no way around that. It's going to happen. And we were talking about Hillary is saying that she would have armed the Syrians and utilized them in the fight against ISIS and some of the other things that are going on over there. Is there a way to control the arms that we're sending over there? Are we better off just not giving them anything and let them fight it out? And then if the one that comes out ahead and they're not, we're not comfortable with them, then we have to do something then.
I'll use a classic example of what you're talking about, Truman. When the Russians were in Afghanistan,
right?
We armed the freedom fighters, mm-hmm. as they were called, I think, at the time, with shoulder-fired missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And the Russians started losing all their attack aircraft and their attack helos with these shoulder-fired missiles. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know how many we gave them, but it must have been a shipload of shoulder-fired missiles.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, those shoulder-fired missiles got into the hands of the same people we're fighting in Afghanistan and Afghanistan mm-hmm. now. Now, there might not be many left, but they're also now learned how to use them, and I think they're being supplied with the Russian shoulder-fired mm-hmm. IR-guided missiles that can home in on those hot tailpipes mm-hmm. of the attack aircraft. So I don't know how you control that. We get rid of one group, and we got another one we're fighting in the same country. And our ability to think, or our lack of foresight,
mm-hmm.
to think that we can go in and change the culture of thousands of years by waving American flag and saying, we want to show you how to do democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change culture mm-hmm. in a few years. It takes hundreds, if not thousands of years to change a culture. And if you look at the Balkans, you look at any place around the world where we've gone in and say, we're going to have democratic rule in the country. We're going in there and we're going to liberate you and make democracy your base of government. I don't think there's very few places that has occurred, except like in World War II, where the countries were already based on the same principles,
mm-hmm.
and we just cleared out the Germans and the Italians and the Japanese, and
right.
people went back to their normal way of life, which was somewhat like ours. But these radical parts of the world we're dealing with, you can't change it, I don't think.
Well, if you look at it, I really don't like our media being anywhere in those type areas, because the information you get back is so anti-American, which really disturbs me a lot. And it's a whole lot different than what it was during World War II, when they were basically pro-military, and anything they did, they had to do. But you see, think just like the Israelis, Palestinians or whichever one are there at the time, they will actually put children and stuff where they are, so that if they're fired upon, innocent civilians are going to be killed. We have the same thing that's going on in the Middle East and Afghanistan and Iraq and other places like that. We will fire on somebody, but we do everything, as you know, to try to keep innocent civilians from being killed. But yet they load them up around them, and it brings public opinion against us when something like that happens, even though you're doing everything possible to keep it from happening. And you look at, if you look at the Muslims who are controlling most of this, the threat, and you have Muslim groups start propping up in the United States, and some people are caught up in it, and they like what they're hearing, and they don't get this other side of what's going on with that particular type of religion. And of course, since it is a religion, it's welcome here, because we have freedom of religion in our country.
Well, as I mentioned previously, Truman, 1.6 billion Muslim is out of the, 6 billion people in the world. That's a very large percentage. And I'm sure that the overwhelming majority of those people are relatively peace-loving people. They just have a different way of looking at what religion. I mean, religion has probably created more war than any other one thing in the world.
When you have the Muslim religions over, say, in the Middle East, it's the power brokers that are actually running that religion. And if you don't follow their rules and regulations, then you're eliminated. And especially if you're a Christian, you're done for.
Well, you know, there's a lot of finger pointing you can do about who's responsible for what, but I just take an example in the U.S. of the Mormon religion and how they were treated before they crossed over into Utah. I mean, they were persecuted, they were killed, they were murdered,
and they had to hire their own assassins to protect them.
So, you know, it's, and you look back at in the European back in the 1300s, 1400s, 1500s Inquisition.
Yeah,
that's religion.
Yeah,
and that was warfare of a terrible kind, where if you didn't believe what somebody wanted you to believe, you were tortured or burned at the stake. So I don't think there's an answer to how we, I guess, carry over into warfare from a religious misunderstanding. Now, sometimes war is created strictly on military or territorial, I guess, is better, disputes, like the Suez Canal. Been a lot of fighting over the Suez Canal. That's strictly territorial.
Right.
Some nationalism thrown on top of that, but and if you look at the way the boundaries of the countries in the Middle East, that was not made by the countries and the people in those countries. That was made at the end of World War One and the end of World War Two, when the European and American powers divided up that part of the country based on their own requirement for oil. The only reason we're fighting in the Middle East is not because we want the Middle East. The only reason we're fighting in the Middle East, my personal opinion, is oil.
Yeah, and it's vital to us.
It's vital.
Yes.
Now, we're getting more and more dependent on ourselves and not on a transmission line or a bunch of ships bringing oil to our country. But that's one of the reasons that the Europeans have been very hesitant to try to reel in Putin, because of the gas he supplies to the European countries. And they don't have any other choice. So there's a lot of factors that just don't ever show up. And you say, why'd they do that? Well, you almost have to be inside the Situation Room in the White House to understand why we really do things sometimes. And most of that's not ever going to get in the press. I think about the 50s with mm-hmm. Eisenhower as probably the most peaceful time we have seen.
It was.
In a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I try to visualize and look down the line and look at our leadership and our way of life and what's happening around the world and try to figure out when we're going to have another period like that. And to my chagrin, I don't see a period like that.
You know, there's always something comes up. And I think back, we were talking about religion and war and terrorist groups and things like that. But if you go back to Stalin, when he took over for Russia, his was mostly just plain power, wasn't it? I mean, he was one of the more, probably the more most powerful person at that time. I can still remember when they asked him how many people had he killed to get where he was, and he held up one finger. Of course, that was 1 million people. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And he shortchanged himself when he raised one finger.
Yeah, he did.
Stalin ruled by fear and ruled by terror. Mm-hmm. With the secret police and the gulags up in Siberia. And I've seen estimates as high as 10 million people that disappeared, you know, somewhere, some way under Stalin's rule. But it's hard to tell.
It is. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Admiral Jimmy Taylor.
If you've got a driver that's about to be 16, I invite you to stop by e1auto.com, 1605 Memorial Boulevard in Murfreesboro. We've got the perfect $3,000 to $7,000 truck or car for your soon-to-be 16-year-old or high school driver. This is Jimmy Evans, owner of E1 Auto. Stop by today because we specialize in $3,000 to $6,500, even $7,500 trucks and cars. That's e1auto.com, 896-2277 or 896-CARS.
Since 1940, your first choice for air conditioning and heating repairs has been Roscoe Brown. Now when you have plumbing problems, it's also Roscoe Brown. For any type of plumbing service and innovative plumbing solutions, Roscoe Brown is fully licensed, bonded, and insured, and fully qualified to assist with heating, air conditioning, and now plumbing. Roscoe Brown.
Call 888-MY-ROSCOE.
Your friend since 1940, Roscoe Brown is who you trust.
Ideas Tees introduces its newest edition, Raider Tees.
Yes, just in time for football in Middle Tennessee, the Blue Raiders fan source for officially licensed Middle Tennessee gear is Raider Tees. Located at 910 Richley Road behind Chewy's and Chili's off Broad Street, Raider Tees open this fall on game days.
Your season or game day ticket gets you 25% off on game day.
Raider Tees by Ideas Tees.
910 Richley Road off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's.
Today, more and more people are insuring their homes with us through Auto Owners Insurance. We'll provide low-cost quality protection and claim service. And if you insure both your home and car through Auto Owners Insurance, you'll qualify for additional premium discounts. I'm Doran Claiborne with Claiborne & Taylor Insurance. Come by our office at 319 West McKnight Drive or give us a call at 893-5064.
You can depend on Claiborne & Taylor.
The Truman Show on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
And welcome back with Admiral Jimmy Taylor. I'm absolutely loving this show, Jimmy. It's brought to you by Metal Max Roofing and Siding, located at 900 Captain Joe Fulgham Drive, just off Middle Tennessee Boulevard, right here in Murfreesboro. Steel is a unique material that can be recycled, conserving energy and natural resources. Steel is also an excellent cost-effective alternative to asphalt shingle roofs. Metal roofs are beautiful, resistant to wind damage, roof rust, and some are less expensive than asphalt shingles. They offer factory direct pricing so you can buy your roofing and siding materials straight from the manufacturer without the middleman. Go by and see their friendly staff today and let them show you over 20 different colors of Metal Max Roofing and Siding. Give them a call today at 494-1693, 494-1693. Pull them up on the website, www.metalmaxllc.com. Well, we've got so many ways we can go because it's not just in the Middle East anymore, is it? I mean, you're seeing changes with into Europe, and we were talking off the air, into England, France, Italy, all across Europe, you're seeing changes that are developing there because this certain religion is moving in there and it's moving here, and there is a lot of unrest there simply because of that.
Well, trying to integrate a new culture into your old culture that's been around for hundreds of years, there's always going to be conflict,
mm-hmm.
and it's how you handle that conflict.
Right.
And I guess you could compare that almost to what happens in some of our cities when some people think the police overreact and they go on a rampage in towns and burn and riot. So I don't think it's different. I think it's human nature.
Human nature is to go in and loot everything because something had happened to someone?
Well, a human nature to be upset with a new culture trying to move in on top of you.
Yes.
Or an old culture that doesn't fit just right and are making themselves better known.
Mm-hmm.
I probably have sounded very negative today.
No, you haven't.
But
you're being realistic.
But that's the reality of the situation we're in today.
Yeah.
But I still think that the American way of life is unparalleled in the world today.
Yes.
And anytime I see that American flag go marching by me or waved in front of me at a ceremony, it brings a lump to my throat.
Okay.
I get very emotional at seeing the U.S. flag and what that stands for.
Yes.
And think about the number of friends and the number of people that aren't related to me or unknown to me. When I was in San Diego last month, and I went out to Point Loma, which is the peninsula that sticks out into the Pacific at mm-hmm. San Diego, which is a southwestern point of the United States. There's a military, a Point Loma National Cemetery there. And I've always wanted to do this. So I went out there and I drove through the cemetery and I stopped. And they've got these Torrey pines in the cemetery, those white glistening rows of marble tombstones run right down the slope right to the Pacific Ocean, that deep blue Pacific Ocean, and the American flag flapping there and the breeze coming off the Pacific. And it had a very emotional tug on me to think about those sacrifices, and it's hard to even talk about. So
it's hard for anybody in the military that's ever been through this that are fighting for the things that they believe in. And I don't know if you've ever met Bill Allen, who lives here. He was at D-Day in 1946. When all that happened, it still comes to him. And you know the thing that bothers him the most is when he sees people who are, in effect, degrading what they were over there fighting for. It really bothers him. A tear will come to his eyes quicker than anything else when he sees some of the things that are going on right now in this country. And I can't understand how we can just put our heroes underneath our feet and just squash around on them. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. It tears me all to pieces. Now, let's get away from that just a little bit, because that was one question I was going to ask you. Star Wars, when Reagan was in. Tell me a little bit about that, because I don't think most of the people actually understood what was going on when he was talking about that.
Well, I've got a personal friend who used to fly F-8s with me, just a good old fighter pilot kind of guy, who finished number one in his academy class.
Ooh.
Was brilliant. While we were trying to put the F-14, I'll eventually get to Star Wars here, but while we were putting together F-14 program. I was trying to put together aircrew training part before we even had airplanes to fly. And this guy was trying to put together a computer managed training program. And he thought in circles and diagrams and triangles and up in the ether way above my head. I worked with him for 2 years and finally started to get a little bit of glim of what he was thinking about and how he wanted to tie the world together in a thought process using computers. Now, when he retired from the Navy, he was a commanding officer of a nuclear carrier when he retired. He went to Carnegie Mellon in kind of their government-funded programs at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. And he was one of the architects for Star Wars. And I was in charge of the Navy's ROTC program at that time frame, and I went to Carnegie Mellon to initiate a new ROTC, Navy ROTC at Carnegie Mellon. And I didn't even know this guy was up there, and I ran into him. And he told me what he was doing. And basically, that program is a shield that's supposed to protect the U.S. of A.
Right.
And it's so complex and so involved and has so many moving parts to do that. And so many things have to come together from so many different areas. And trying to control all those inputs and make it coherent and make it work. And you have seen some things that have been on the news where we're launching a missile to hit a missile. You know, that's like shooting a 22 on this side of town and try to hit a 22 fired from the other side. You can imagine how likely you are to do that just by pointing and shooting. So you have to have control over all that infrastructure or understand how it works in order to, and the Israelis now are shooting missiles out of the air with missiles. That's basically a Star Wars type program.
Right.
And it's very complex and it's very expensive. And those missiles that are shooting out of the missiles are, and we have the same thing in the space. Star Wars is basically a space-based type system, the way I understand it, where you can shoot a satellite down with another satellite or have something that's fired from Earth that can intercept a satellite that might be a threat. Now, whether we have satellites up there that have weapons in them that can be launched back to Earth, I have no idea. That's way outside my pay grade. But that's kind of what Star Wars was supposed to be, where it is now and how effective it is and how much money we put into it. It's a program that's not discussed much anymore. Since Reagan left, I haven't seen any information, and I saw this guy I was talking about who was involved in that Star Wars program and at an event month before last in San Diego, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him in a cocktail era type place or at a banquet about what he was doing. I think he still might be somewhat involved in that program.
I think you feel like I am. I do. I believe that we need to be on guard on foreign soil and all around us, but we have to also have to be on guard with inside our own country, because you and I, we've seen a lot of things erode over the years that I never thought would ever be touched.
Well, you could probably, we could sit down, Truman, and we could start a list of things that have changed since we got through our when we started thinking about things like this, maybe in high school and college, and there is things that have changed, and also not that have not have gone away, but things that have been added. Now, how you do the pluses and minuses, and see where you really stand at a bottom line on the health of the U.S. of A.
Right.
I don't know how you measure that.
I think it's coughing a little bit right now.
Might have a slight fever coming
on. Yeah, yeah. Jimmy, it's always good to have you on. You're one of my favorite people in the world. I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, and it seemed more like 5 minutes, which it does right now.
Well, I appreciate what you do for the county and your audience out there, Truman. You do provide a wide background of information for them, and a lot of my friends and kin folks always say, "Oh, I enjoy the Truman Show," and
especially when Jimmy's on, our brother.
But I enjoy being on here, and I appreciate the kind of effort you make for the county, Truman.
Thank you very much. But it's just through people like you that it's possible.
Thank you,
Jimmy. We'll see you guys in the morning at 9 o'clock, and one of Jimmy's good friends, Mr. Dan Whittle, will be on. See you then.